impact of single-step estimation methods on selection index. We've in extension talked a lot about the utility of selection index, but there's certainly differences in some sort of twists that come with single-step going into that, and so we've asked Matt to address that. Matt's a faculty member at the University of Nebraska, does a lot of work on the extension front, and so Matt, the floor is yours. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. So, you know, Bruce was really behind kind of organizing a lot of the last several talks, and Bruce is actually an exceptional organizer, so he kind of sent out a summary of what all of us should talk about, and undermine, he said, whatever Matt wants to say. And so I've taken that to heart, and as best I can, I'm going to stick to that charge, Bruce. So if we think about selection indices in a nutshell, really what they are a tool to enable informed multiple trait selection. So every bull buyer, every bull maker performs multiple trait selection in some manner, but this is a much more comprehensive, and as I said, informed way to do it, rather than kind of the back of your pants approach, or really more often than not, what's done is setting independent culling levels, which of course don't always lead to the most economically informed decisions. And so kind of what we heard as this session started off, really economic selection indices are predicated on breeding objectives. So clearly define really what are your objectives in terms of simple things like replacement heifers, yes, no, what are your marketing endpoints, marketing goals, production environment, etc. And then, of course, economic parameters that go along with those ERTs associated with a direct cost or a direct stream of revenue. And, of course, they take into account the relationship between traits. I'll go into that point in a bit more detail. And then also the population, or we may even think about it as individual enterprise means. Generally, the indexes that we have now are static, and so as a consequence, really based on population-wide means, phenotypic means, but as we talk later on, the ability to perhaps customize these kind of tools, then I think it allows us to take advantage of differences in enterprise-level phenotypic means. The really design, and this is an important point to understand, and it's been disappointing to me to realize how many people don't understand this. They're really designed to improve commercial level profitability. That's a pretty important point. And again, I'm not confident that all of us understand that. And these tools are not to be confused with what breeder organizational trait specific objectives may be. Right? So a breed can say, as a breed, we really need to improve X. But that's different than saying, here is how X impacts commercial level profit. And so that delineation is quite important. I thought it was interesting. Dorian raised the Dickersonian index and retrospect approach, which is a really interesting way to look in retrospect and ask the question, what have seed stock producers actually been selecting on, and really what are the weights on those various traits? And so really it can give you a sense of, in the nucleus, what would the index weight be based on the change they've made in component traits? The really neat and useful part of that exercise is to say, here's what the breed has elected to weight these traits, and here's how it differs from what an economic model might say that they should be weighted if our goal is commercial level profitability. So that's actually a useful exercise to go through. So, of course, selection indices not new. Newer to the beef industry, about 10 years, roughly, since they were first rolled out. Pretty fast rate of technology adoption, given the original theory was published in 1942. That's being facetious, okay? And it won't be the first time, just 30 minutes. But it's old hat, right, Scott? It's old hat to other industries. The idea of selecting candidates to be parents, not just on selection indices, but exclusively on selection indices, as would be practiced in competing protein sources. So what impacts selection indices? Well, changes in the goal traits, if for some reason the breeding objective changes due to market forces and the goal traits, the ones that are economically relevant, we really want to change. Those may change for some reason. Changes to the traits with EPD. Maybe all of a sudden we're able to develop an expected progeny difference for a trait that we know is economically relevant, and before we simply didn't have it. Changes to the genetic relationships or the relationships in general between traits. Generally, these tools are fairly robust against the minor differences in genetic relationships. They're fairly robust against those. But obviously, if we use vastly incorrect parameter estimates, those would need to be updated. As Bruce mentioned, changes in component trait accuracy can certainly create changes in these indices. Another thing I'll go through in more detail is changes to trait definition, particularly with respect to SNAIN. If the inference of a trait changed, then really we have to reevaluate perhaps the economic value we assigned to that originally. Of course, economic parameters or assumptions need to be updated over time. And then as changes in population enterprise level means change, if you think about things that maybe inherently have a threshold related to when the profit function changes, then those changes in population mean would impact the selection index. So the general form, and I'm going to throw up just a little bit of algebra. Not because, so there's people in here that would understand it very easily, and so it's not to help them. It's more to show the rest of you that when people like us throw these things up, they're really not complicated. So this very simple form of a selection index, B is the weight that we apply to, in this case, it would be phenotypes that are going to be in the index. P is really a matrix of phenotypic relationships between the traits that we consider economically relevant, the traits in the goal. G then is the genetic relationships between the traits that actually we're going to put in the index and the traits we really want to change. There doesn't have to be a one-to-one relationship between those. And then V is just the economic value associated with the one unit change in those traits. This really isn't the form we use. So we use this, and all I've done here is change a P to a G, another G, because we apply these index weights to EPDs. And so as a consequence, we need to contemplate the genetic relationships between traits and not the phenotypic relationships. So that's really all that I've done here. Now, if we think about an example here, and this is very much a terminal index example. I kind of threw this together quickly. Note that if you used an index that included these traits, I'm confident one of the start assumptions that your breed organization, if they were judicious about this, would put in there is not to be used if you're keeping back replacement heifers, right? That would be the wise thing to advise people, because there's nothing here that incentivizes decreasing cow maintenance costs or improving fertility, et cetera, right? I'm not sure. This is the second time I'm being facetious that all breed organizations do that. But here on my left, oddly enough, it's your left too. I have a list of goal traits, right? Things that we directly get paid for: hog carcass weight, yield grade, quality grade, things that have a cost associated with them, feed intake, yardage, and then things like mortality and morbidity, right? You can think about animal health, bovine respiratory disease, et cetera, that may impact those. And on the right-hand side, maybe things that we actually have EPDs for. And in some cases, there's a one-to-one relationship between the left and right-hand side. What about mortality and morbidity? Logically, those fit our breeding goal, don't they? They're economically relevant. We don't have EPDs for them. And unfortunately, the genetic relationships between them and the traits for which we do have EPDs are largely, not completely, largely unknown. That creates complexity. And so what we tend to do is make this assumption where actually the goal traits and the index traits are exactly the same thing, so I can take out all those fancy letters in the middle and say the index weight equals the economic value. We make that big assumption a lot of times because what we did in my previous example is we ignore the fact that things like mortality and morbidity should actually be in the goal because we don't know how they're related. else, so we just forget they should be in the board, right? But this is something that is commonly done, although it's rarely the case, I would argue. We make some assumptions to force this case, and the reality is relative to single step, which you understand the changes to national capital valuation across all organizations that have moved to single step, part of those are related truly to single step. And there's a whole lot of changes that you witness are due to a lot of other improvements that are completely external to the way genomic information is being included in national capital valuation. Updates to genetic parameter estimates, updates to economic selection indices, improvements in the underlying statistical models, right? A lot of other improvements that we're all throwing into a big bucket and saying changes due to single step. Why was that done? Well, if you had to make big changes in something, I bet you try to make them all at one time too, right? So that was probably a wise decision. Some breeds took this opportunity and movement to single step to really update to the case where they were able to improve or include more economically relevant traits into their selection index. So what is the accuracy of an index? This, I know, probably looks even more confusing, but it's really not. So accuracy, if we think about that, we've got this covariance divided by the square root of the product of two variances. I know I explained that so simply that everyone's with me now, and I can probably just go ahead and go to the next slide. In the top, what we have is the covariance really between the aggregate genotype, okay, the totality of the genetic merits of an individual for our goal traits, and the index. And the denominator, I have on the right-hand side here, really the variance in that aggregate genotype on the left-hand side, the variance in the index. Okay, this is really the accuracy of the index, which tells me when I make change in the index, am I improving, or how much am I improving really the things that drive profitability, the things in the goal. So what can increase the accuracy of an index? Well, if I have more EPD for economically relevant traits, that improves the accuracy. Improving the accuracy of the component traits in the index, as we have witnessed through single-step implementation, also improves the accuracy of the index. So I have a little bit of extra verbiage underneath here. The form I showed you here assumes that the EPDs have perfect accuracy, and so this actual form would give you the upper bound in terms of the accuracy of the index. If I replace this with a phenotypic variance-covariance matrix, it gives me the lower bound of the accuracy of the index, assuming I place selection pressure on actual phenotypes and not the actual EPD. But the take home is, when we include more economically relevant traits and increase the accuracy of component trait EPDs, we can increase the accuracy of the index. All right, if we think about changes in accuracy to component traits, assume this real simple index here. I weight the first trait by 0.9, the second trait by 0.1. Let's assume that every single animal in the population for the first trait, for their EPD, had exactly the same EPD. No variation whatsoever in the EPD for that trait. Then the only thing that drives differences in this index are differences in animals' EPD for the second trait, even though it's not weighted nearly as heavily. Right? So as we're able to increase accuracy to component EPDs, we disperse those EPDs, we spread them out, and allow some traits then perhaps to move the index more than what they would have before when they were all exceptionally low accuracy. Changes to trait definition. So seemingly the same trait may have vastly different scale and thus inference. So a nice example is marbling or reproductive longevity. So the scale or interpretation of the EPD has to match the scale or interpretation of the economic value. And I'll show you an example here. Let's assume the economic value for marbling is a dollar when we assume that marbling is measured on a 100-point scale. So that says I go from 1 to 2 on a 100-point scale. That's worth a dollar, holding every other trait constant. But what if the EPD... okay, the trait the EPD represents is marbling on a 1 to 10 scale. Now, in that case, is the weighting of marbling in the index still 1, equal to a dollar? people in the front row? Right? It's not. It's not. I really changed the trait definition. Okay? I really changed the trait definition. So the reason I point this out is some of you go through changes in national cattle evaluation. You may change the definition of the traits in some way. You need to go back and reevaluate this. Otherwise, you may have traits that are way over emphasized in the index or maybe way under emphasized in the index, depending on how the scaling went. Re-ranking based on component EPD. Of course, the sensitivity re-ranking in the index depends on how the component traits moved and also how they're weighted in the index. And so an example, Steve sent this to me very kindly. Just an example, across all animals in the ASA database, if we look at the rank correlation before this single step evaluation and after, these are the rank correlations for the two Simmental-based indices, all-purpose index and TI. And so obviously there were some rank change in component traits, some relatively larger changes for carcass traits, particular carcass weight, which would influence TI, some changes in things like calving ease, maternal calving ease, which may make changes in API. But the fact is, particularly as you do reasonableness checks, you need to look at not only correlations among component traits, but also among the indices. So if we think about single steps impact on economic indices, in general, I'd say positive, right? So increased accuracy of the index for the reasons that I discussed. And I would say that re-ranking isn't a bad thing if re-ranking leads us to something that's closer to the truth. I say that as somebody that's not a bull seller, right? But if it's closer to the truth, we should accept the re-ranking. And also, from an organizational perspective, we need to understand when and if we need to conduct reasonableness checks for things like scaling issues that may exist. So, most breeds have either crossed the finish line in releasing single-step evaluations or will do so in the next, let's say, 45 or 60 days, right? So, worst over for a while. Well, that's really not true. So, there will be continued evolutions, right, Daniela, in single-step methodology? But bigger than that, I would say, now is the time to turn an organizational focus to other things that have been missing in national cattle evaluation. One, the dearth of some economically relevant traits, phenotypes for them, that exist in most national cattle evaluation databases. Carcass, female fertility, health of the beef, but I'm also thinking animal health kinds of things. Dorian talked about that this morning. And I know most breeds are trying to get more of that data themselves, but if there's a breed organization that thinks that magically they're going to get all the data they need for those traits from within their own seed stock population, that's a pipe dream. That's absolutely idiotic. Okay? This requires integration and collaboration with the commercial industry where the real economically relevant traits are collected every day. That is no small undertaking, but that's what this requires. The other thing is we have to enable more accurate selection decisions. So what we've done through single step is we've taken a lot of data and we've turned that data into information and knowledge, right? Took a whole lot of genotypes, we turned it into information and knowledge vis-a-vis genomically enhanced EPDs. That's a good first step. What we need to do is now take the expanded list of tools we have and turn it into decisions. So just having 20 EPDs that are now genomically enhanced doesn't help make the decision by itself. And that's where economic selection indices come into play. So, an approach perhaps to do that. So imagine that you're somebody that has a young family, you're in your 30s, you run a large ranch, right? You got the little kiddos at night, trying to take care of the books, and it's time to buy bulls, which you do once a year, which doesn't make you a genetics expert. What do you really want somebody to do? Help you make the decision, right? It's like having somebody do your taxes. You're all smart people, but I assume you hire accountants. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands on that one, actually, particularly from you, Wade. But what you could envision is actually a web-based tool where a producer says, yeah, these are parameters about my herd, production parameters. Here's kind of the average sale weight I've had, kind of what the choice select spread is, et cetera, what my average quality grade is, mature cow size, and they can be honest because they're just there with themselves. They're not telling their neighbor how big their cows are. And that information can actually be used then to help develop the economic values that are germane to their particular production system. Those can then be married with EPD, perhaps, Donnie, from a list of bulls at your sale. Or maybe through a secure interface from an entire breed organization. And so those then economic values can be applied across breeds using a crossbreed EPD so that that producer can actually make an informed decision in an economic context for bulls that fit their breeding objective and their production environment in a web-based platform. I think helping people make the decision is what we really need to do if we want people to actually use the tools, right? If we just gave you the components to a cell phone and say, you've got smartphone technology, go use it. None of us would be using a smartphone. We've got to help them put it together. And so, luckily, and I was really glad to hear the first talk, right? So a lot of effort going in to revise some of these tools that are really only a decade old in the beef cattle industry. Bruce Holt and the folks at Clay Center, Bob Weber and I received a USDA grant, and we were finally able to say that within the past couple months, to actually take a stab at developing web-based decision support tools. Something that obviously has been done in the past by others in the room, but part of the problem before was not a lot of money to develop it, really not a long-term sustainability model, and also sometimes the models were far too complex for the average person to really help parameterize. And so using a tiered system such that anyone can use it, but if you actually know unit cost of production, we're going to be able to supply more accurate tools, I think is perhaps an approach forward. So a three-year project, we're just getting started, hopefully provide updates and subsequent BIS. So with that, I covered the topic of whatever Matt wanted to talk about, relative selection indices, and Bob, wherever you are, I'll turn it over to you, happy to answer any questions before our next speaker.
What questions might you have for Matt? We've got time for a couple. Scott?
So, assuming you make no changes to the traits in your index, how often should you evaluate or reevaluate your economics?
So, the question was, assuming you make no changes to the traits in your index, how often should you reevaluate the essentially economic parameters that feed into it? I don't know if I have a great answer, Scott. I think part of that depends on those are generally speaking, and I think for good reason, an average over multiple years, allowing them to be a bit more robust in forecasting the future. And I'm not trying to circumvent the direct answer, but I think part of the answer is what is that rolling average? Is it 3 or 5? In which case, I think helps inform how often you need to revisit that. Doing it on an annual basis, I think is really probably more refined than what we really need to do. If it's every 3 years, that's probably good enough. The reality is things change, everyone knows that, but I'm not aware of a case where a pound of feed's ever been worth more than a pound of calf. Right, so some of those relationships stay relatively constant over the long time, right?
Good question. Anybody else? Any other questions for Matt? Matt, I thought your comment on the difference between the trait selection objective of nucleus or seed stock breeders versus the selection index is a really important piece.
It's a hard pill for some people to swallow, right? If you're a nucleus breeder that's known for increasing whatever, trait X, trait X isn't weighted really heavily in the index. That can be a hard thing to rationalize. But those two things aren't mutually exclusive. They're not mutually exclusive at all. Right? A breeder can say, I'm going to be a nucleus leader known for this. That does not necessarily mean the index, based on commercial level profitability, has to weight that extremely high.
The other kind of flip side of that, I think, is as a breed makes dramatic improvement in a trait, its relative value in the index changes as well.
And as the commercial industry really makes progress in a given trait, the relative economic value changes as well. That's a really big thing. If pregnancy were 100%, say every heifer in the commercial industry got pregnant within the first 30 days, what's the relative economic value of heifer pregnancy? No change to be made.
I've been
feeding this over my Facebook account and tweeting. Those of you that know me are laughing.
Or sarcasm from Spader Express. The question.
It says, Matt, will we ever see the breeds use a universal index?
Yeah, so universal index across breeds. I understand why that's appealing, because we very much want EPDs that are directly comparable across breeds. But let's think about breeds in terms of biological type. The reality is, I take a decision to use a Char label for a different reason than I take a decision to use a Hereford. And so when I assume a population mean, I've got a group of cows, and I'm going to use a Char label to breed them versus a Hereford bull to breed them, those phenotypic means of a given set of traits are inherently different. And those impact the economic values then. So I would contend that we really need to think about that hard before we wish to go down that path. Breeds are known for different things.
Or at the very least, you've got to start doing these breed difference accountings and the heterotic effects that go with them.
I would say that's maybe not quite as straightforward as saying we want EPDs directly comparable to those breeds.
Great. Any last question? Donnie Schiefelberg.
How do you adjust for a breed's intended purpose in an index so that all breeds aren't necessarily producing the same kind of animals? And really, you want a different kind of animal to be the prize in each different breed.
So, yeah. Complementarity.
Yes.
That's it. Yeah, so I'll maybe turn that around. That's a good question. So if we think about breeding systems in general, right, we haven't lost heterosis over the years. What we have lost is breed complementarity. And that's because of the decisions that have been made by nucleus breeders across the majority of our beef breeds. For whatever reason, they've chosen to try to be more similar. I think that's a disservice to the commercial cattle industry.
How do you build it into the index so you don't drive it that way? Because most indexes are comprised very similarly. So Angus is looking like Chevrolet, and Chevrolet is becoming more Angus because we're driving the same economic inputs in both indexes.
I know what you're saying. I don't. So one part of that is, right, the decision in selecting a bull is not just the additive genetic merit of the index, but also his intended use. So the mating scheme, which takes into account heterosis and some of the breed complementarity. So, yeah, can we accommodate that decision-making process? The answer is yes. The bigger point to that, though, is, I honestly believe there are breed organizations that need to plant a flag and say, this is what we're going to be doing. And it may be something that's not completely sexy right now, but it's needed by the commercial industry. And I'm not seeing, in general, a willingness of organizations to do
that. Matt, does Parker come down? You and I have both talked about this, I think, if I'm thinking about it right. The separation of the maternal-terminal mating decision. So being more focused in those sort of sub-objectives of this bull is going to get used to build replacement heifers versus the bull that's going to get used in a terminal environment. And the more you separate those, the more different the selection index customized to that looks, I think.
Good question.
Great. Let's give Matt a nice round of applause. Thanks, Matt.